Hello and welcome to the Big Boat Interview. I'm Lucy Dunn, Content Director at Boat, and this week we're going to hear from two guests, Max Bello, International Policy Expert for Mission Blue, and Alexei Mikhailov, founder of Bering Yachts, a yacht builder specializing in robust steel and aluminium explorer yachts. Max Bello has been helping the Dominican Republic work towards its 30 by 30 initiative. 30 by 30 is a global pledge to conserve a minimum of 30% of land and sea for biodiversity by 2030, and it's a step up from the original UN pledge of 10%. This work has not been all smooth sailing, though. 2 years ago, the project was nearly derailed when the Minister of Environment that he'd been working with was murdered trying to do his job. This week, the DR has announced its intention to expand its original marine protected area, an area called Silver Blank, and add a new zone called the Beata Ridge. Silver Blank is a remote region miles out to sea, home to the largest breeding ground for humpback whales in the world. A scientific expedition was needed to consolidate the project, but expeditions are, by their nature, complicated and costly, which is where Yachts for Science, an organisation which brings together yacht owners with marine conservationists, came in. Enter Bering's Alexei Mikhailov, who stepped in to help with one of his luxury yachts, a fully custom 29-metre Bering 92 called Papillon. So let's hear first from Max Bello about how the trip came about and what drove him to finish the project even after his colleague had been killed. This week's episode is sponsored by KVH, the service which creates innovative connectivity solutions for customers on sea, land and air around the globe. KVH is a global leader in mobile connectivity, content and value-added services with technology designed to enable a mobile world and keep mariners always connected. To find out more, visit www.kvh.com. So, Max, lovely to meet you.
Nice to meet you too, finally.
Yes. So, tell me about your work. You're an advisor for Mission Blue. Can you tell me more about that organization and what it does and what your role is?
Well, this is an organization that was created by Sylvia Earle, the famous marine biologist, oceanographer. That she's about to be 89 years old. She's been working for a long time and still diving. And we met years ago working on marine protected areas when I was at the Pew Charitable Trust. And then we became very good friends and finally ended up working together at Mission Blue. And what we've been basically trying to do with Mission Blue through the Hope Spots, it's to also accelerate the creation of marine protected areas. We work, for years to engaging with the UN and with all the countries to agree in a new objective of protection. This is currently, and after that negotiation, 30%. And in our views, also that 30% of protection of the ocean should be highly and fully. That means it's not just about the percentage, but it's also about, or more importantly, about the quality of the marine protected areas. Marine protected areas need to be helpful to recover, to really protect areas. So in order to do that, they need to basically stop activities that are damaging or they're kind of, counterproductive to the function of the ecosystems and the species and process, etc.
So come back to the Dominican Republic. Tell me about its history with its own conservation efforts.
So Dominican Republic is in currently about 11% of protection of the ocean, which is mainly made it by one marine protected area that that is well known globally called the Silver Blank. It's an area that hosts one of the most important gathering of humpback whales in the Atlantic and in the world, reproductive and breeding area that they use for the winter time. You know, the whales migrate from the North Pole in this case, and they spend, you know, the summer there. They feed on krill and other species, and then they go down to the tropics, and then they stay there. They reproduce, they have their babies, and then they go back. You know, they don't feed there. They actually live from what they've been feeding and eating in the north. So this area is very important for whales, but also it's an incredible platform, an area that is that is very strange. In the middle of the ocean, is very shallow. So that is basically what they've been protecting. There's still a lot of issues in terms of illegal and informal fishing in that area, and so that's one of the challenges that we now we need to face. They've been doing pretty, I mean, much better in land. They've been going over 20% of protection in the land. With several issues, but it's a well-known country in terms of protecting and conserving their forests and some beautiful areas. That's why they're visited by many people. It's a very tourism is probably their most important, one of the two most important economic activities. So they've been doing a pretty good job. They arrived to the 10%, so they actually did their homework in terms of getting the previous objective of the United Nations. And now they're willing to go before 2030 to arrive, you know, basically 6 years before to the 30% that is being committed to the United Nations.
Okay. But it's not been all smooth sailing, because tell me about the environmental minister and what happened.
It have not been absolutely not been an easy ride. It never is with marine protected areas. No, I mean, it's even though it's a concept that is not new, Polynesians have been using it for 1,000 years. Most of the time, we value the ocean for what is extracted, what we can take, what we can make money out of, which normally is fish and other things, no? And so for countries to actually have these conversations, first of all, it's not easy, because many people say, oh, we're going to put aside this, we're not going to be able to get in there, we're not going to be able to take fish, et cetera, et cetera. So that's one key thing that is kind of a normal situation that would happen in many places. But we have a very good Minister of Environment at that time, Orlando Jorge Mera, that understood the importance of the marine protected areas. That he understood the importance of a legacy of Abinader, President Abinader legacy, his legacy. And, you know, he understood also the importance of how much actually the Dominican Republic lives out of the ocean and the protection of the ocean. I mean, most people that knows Dominican Republic, for example, that goes to Punta Cana, they go to the beach, they go to actually to enjoy the ocean, no? And so he understood the importance of doing more for the ocean. And we set up, you know, a roadmap to get there. We had a plan to do the announcement in Portugal for the second UN Ocean meeting, but couple weeks before that, and when we were getting everything ready for that announcement, that we were going to announce, you know, that the Dominican Republic was preparing to get there to that 30%, he was killed in his office.
I mean, that's quite shocking, sort of murdered in his office. Tell me a little bit more about it. Who murdered him? Why?
Well, it was a friend of him, actually, an old friend of him, that it was affected by the policies of the Ministry of Environment. The Minister of Environment was someone very respected, and it was someone who actually was doing his job. And even to his friends, that they were, you know, affected by, because they were not in compliance with those, with those rules, with those, with that legislation, he would not make differences. He would apply the law as it was, and of course that creates a lot of issues with many people, and this person in particular, you know, he had access to go to his office because he was a friend of him, and he went into his office with a weapon. He confronted about this sort of, you know, situation that he was being affected by, and so he finally killed him, no? Because the minister was doing his job, basically. It was shocking completely. I mean, I had a call with him that day, and so I got a call from someone on his office telling me that this happened. I actually knew before many people in DR itself. You know, it's very sad. Again, he was a very respected professional, but also a very nice human being, very connected, very, very involved and passionate about the environment. And so it really was a shock.
How did it affect his death, affect the project?
I mean, you know, it was first the shock, and it was like, never had any situation like that. No, I mean, I've been having, you know, like been working with countries, and I would get, I don't know, the minister being fired, or you know, something happened, or you know, but never anything like that. And mm-hmm. I think it was first the recover of the shock. The person that I knew that we were working together, you know, was killed. And then the other part was like, then, okay, what are we going to do, no? And really what moved us was kind of like, okay, we need to do this because he won it. And I was in Los Angeles for the Summit of the Americas. And I got to meet with the president. And I said, President, I mean, we were working with the minister, and because of you, you know, wanted us to work on this to get to the 30%, and you know, and this happened, and what do we do? And so he said, well, you know, we need to continue also in his name. I mean, and I 100% agree. I mean, it was his own legacy, and I think we needed to keep it alive as well, no, and so he said, like, let's keep going. So then we kind of reinitiate the conversation about the announcement. We did the announcement with the two vice ministers, José Ramón and Milagros in Portugal. We did the announcement. We did the announcement in his name. And one of the areas that we were thinking at that time was a binational area of the Cordillera de Ata, and we, you know, we decide that needed to take to have his name. You know? So one of the areas that actually will be created, that are going to be created, it's Orlando Jorge Mera Beata Ridge Marine Protected Area.
So where is that in relation to Silverbank? That's a different area, you say?
Yes, exactly. So that's a big marine protected area that. Only with that area, if you wouldn't count Silverbank, we would get to 24% of protection. So it's a massive area that goes basically almost from the shore of the island in the south of the country down to basically the border with Colombia. And there's a whole, it covers a whole underwater range. And we know underwater range are critical, are most important hotspots for biodiversity and for, you know, in general for life, you know, because they help process of bringing currents, deep currents with that are colder, but they're also that have more oxygen, and they have also a lot of nutrients, basically brings them up. And then that, in the connection with, you know, sunlight, temperature, creates finally an incredible opportunity for life to bloom. So that area is very important. And again, this is also connecting with a previous announcement and creation of Colombia, Cordillera Beata II protection. And so both of them now will be a binational marine protected area, which makes so much sense. So a couple of years ago, when the Eastern Tropical Pacific marine protected areas were created, I'm talking about Panama, Costa Rica, Ecuador, and Colombia in the Pacific, Colombia also did a marine protected area, a marine park in this area of the Beata Ridge, which is in the border with the economic exclusive zone of Dominican Republic. So now we're going to have a bilateral, a binational marine protected area that will cover a whole ecosystem. So that makes a lot of sense, because what we've seen previously, you know, I have my economic exclusive zone, you protect there, but then the other one is taking everything and destroying. And of course, it would affect the other one too. We need to start thinking, you know, as ecosystems. We need to start thinking as process. If we are about, I mean, we're talking about protecting the ocean, then we need to go bold, big, and we need to protect, you know, what is necessary that goes beyond the frontiers of one country.
So by linking these two areas, that will make 33%. Is that correct?
So we're about 31% with the tours, with the Beata Ridge and then with the Silver Bank. Those are the two, and so the Silver Bank will be an expansion of the existing Silver Bank, which will cover part of the banks that were not protected previously, but more interesting also, it protects the drop-off. And that drop-off, as I mentioned before, it creates this current that goes up to these banks, to these platforms in the middle of the ocean, and also connects, and part of this marine protected area will also protect some of the deepest areas on in the Caribbean, about 8,000 meters, what is called the Puerto Rico Trench, which is also part, it's inside of the economic exclusive zone of Dominican Republic. So with this, we're gonna have a variety. This is very critical. This is very important, because what Dominican Republic is gonna be doing, it's really to protect different environments that have completely different features, but they're equally key to the health of the ocean, not only of Dominican Republic, but of the Caribbean in general.
So you've just come from an expedition in Silver Bank. What were you doing there?
Well, it was as a marine conservation, devoted person, I have to say, you know, Silver Bank always have been in my imagination, no, and my bucket list, to say, in a way. To be in this place, first of all, for you to understand, this is like a shallow area in the middle of the ocean. I mean, you go for like a day on a vessel that gets basically in the middle of the ocean, and then there's this shallow area that, you know, you get in the water and you see the floor. I mean, you see 10, 20 meters down. Yeah. And then it has this, what we call it, bummies, which are heads of corals that have been growing there for millennia and creating this small sort of rocky spots everywhere, no?
Yeah.
We're talking at a huge landscape. I mean, yeah. It is massive, no? And in there, the whales have found also, I don't know for how many years they've been doing this, for thousands of years, they've been coming there they feel safe. The kind of like the you know, these shallow waters and those bummies also create some sort of a wall that, you know, this water comes down. There's no much waves. There's, you know, all this beautiful sort of sanctuary, no, that is being used for these whales to have their babies there, to reproduce. And so then you have these hundreds of whales everywhere. It's just incredible place. I mean, it's just crazy. And most of this, you know, have been destroyed, you know, at the coral. You know, you see the ruins of this corals, which in a way to me, you know, it's kind of like there's the ruin of our civilization. There's the ruin of ourselves. You know, we've been the ones we've been destroying this. But then also inside of these ruins, there's this still living and growing, thriving corals. And, you know, and you can see the possibilities of rebuilding, of changing, of, you know, maybe healing these areas. And so it's such a kind of, to me, it was such a beautiful kind of finding this coral still alive. Probably, you know, 10% of the coral of this area is still alive. And you know, to me, Sylvia always says, you know, when, I don't know, says, you know, you have a shark species that has been decimated 9%, 90%, no? And she always said, like, there's two news, one good, one bad. You know, 90% of it has been disappearing. Good news, 10% is still there. And so how do we change the narrative? How do we change there? And I think it makes so much sense, this area where there are whales that we used to just see them as money, as oil, as meat, you know, most of the planet. I mean, the industrialization of this planet depended at a certain point in history on these whales. And now they've been coming back because we stopped most of the country. You know, there's Norway and Iceland and Japan and others still killing. But in general, as a planet, as, you know, as humanity, we stopped seeing them only as this commodity. But now we see them as this almost equal. We see them as an opportunity for sustainable business, for ecotourism, for whatever it is. It's showing you that we can change, that we have changed. And so to see this place that is thriving, that, you know, there's hundreds of these whales that were almost, you know, to disappear, coming back in this place, they can come back on a country that is doing everything to protect. It's just a whole narrative of hope, you know? And I love that.
And so you were in a team, and what were you doing there? And you were on a yacht called Papillon.
Exactly.
So, which was a luxury yacht. So I'm sure you had a lovely time, but what you were, obviously it wasn't all play. You were also there for work. So what were you, what was your organization doing there? And who were you with as well? Who were the team?
So thanks to Yacht for Science and the beautiful work they do to connect, you know, people like us that we're doing this, trying to understand better of these places that need to be protected. That is extremely, you know, difficult and expensive. I happen to do many expeditions around the world. They're extremely expensive. They're extremely complicated. And to have this platform, the Yacht for Science, to actually support this is just incredible. I mean, I cannot totally put it in words. That with organizations like Blue Marine Foundation, to have also Sea Legacy, one of the, you know, most important sort of communications group, Blue Marine Foundation funding and helping us also with science and funding science for that boat and other expedition that we've been doing in Dominican Republic. to have also then the Papillon, this beautiful boat, and the people very actually so interested, so immersed in this in this possibility and this important task, to have them in there to learn from us what we were doing, to have the Minister of Environment to support also this in terms of, you know, the permits that were needed, in terms of the also capacity and people that needed to be, you know, involved there, to have also, you know, other groups like Blue Nature Alliance to support economically on that, which been they also are committing to help with the implementation of these marine protected areas, which is the next step. To have, of course, Mission Blue, and to have many individuals to that been supporting this work, Richard Bailey's from Teti Aroha Society, Glenn Baxbaum from Argonautica. I mean, many people. This is team sport. I mean, conservation, it is a team sport. And to have all of these people, I hope that I'm not missing anyone, but really it is impressive. To get, you know, the public sector, you know, the government minister of environment, the ANAMAR, the FUNDEMAR, and others, you know, to help us, to have all of these NGOs, to have scientists, to have these, you know, owners and people who put in, you know, this beautiful, amazing. I mean, what a luxury, what a privilege to be in a boat like that, doing, you know, working work like this. It is exactly what we need to do. I think it's just this beautiful picture of how we can all work together to protect what, you know, we should be protecting as a society. But I mean, it was really a successful expedition. We wanted to do a longer trip, but the weather conditions were not the best. But we did the best on what we could, and actually brought us incredible information that we're still kind of reviewing in terms of DNA samples. So taking water from this area, and now we're finding all these species that you don't see them, but the DNA because of you know, skiing or other things are floating in this water. Can be actually traced and can tell you actually what species are in the area much easier than it was, you know, before. This is an incredible tool. We did all the protocols for describing the whales and to identify the whales that we were seeing. And then we did an incredible work with, you know, people like Sam Kretsch that was incredible on filming, and we were taking photos of the whales. We wanted to do in order to show not just the our population, not only the Dominican Republic people, but also to the world what is in there that need to be better protected. So really, really amazing trip.
So, and you'll be using a lot of, obviously looking at the science, but also using the film and imagery to announce the DR's intention. Isn't that correct?
Exactly. This, you know, one of the things we love to do is to use these images of what is there, why we are trying to protect these places. Not just because it's not about against something. It's not against, you know, the industry. It's because of this diversity, of this species, of this richness, no? That makes part of finally our heritage too. If you want to, you know, think about like Dominican Republic sort of, you know, have this incredible heritage of being one of the first places when the Europeans arrived, no? First church, first schools, first university, first everything. But then also have connected, you know, nature. That's what makes us, no? It's not just our human culture, but it's also our relation with nature. And so we want to connect people to that. We want to let people know that Dominican Republic is doing this because of a much bigger legacy, not for Dominican Republic only, but to the planet.
What an amazing story. I love the fact that Jorge Mera is going to be immortalized in a marine sanctuary. So now we're going to hear from Alexei Mikhailov, founder of Bering Yachts. I spoke to him back in March when he was literally in the middle of Silverbank, watching the action and nearing the end of an extremely successful expedition. He explained why Papillon was the best boat for the job, and I asked him, besides whale watching, if there was another purpose of his philanthropic trip. Hi, Alexei.
Hi, Lucy.
Hi. So, Alexei, you founded Bering Yachts in 2007, creating steel and aluminium hulled boats. What would you say is Bering's USP when it comes to explorer yachts?
When companies started, it was not exactly a plan or a strategy or master-minded direction. No, I was in search for a boat for myself, and I was absolutely determined that it should be steel, aluminum or steel. And I couldn't find anything suitable fitting my budget because I could afford just a small boat, 55 foot. And I happened to be in China and decided to build it myself. In the process of building, found a customer and then start the website and found another customer, and it's just one by one. But the idea was, leave aboard explorer safe with a long range with capability to go in the places where no many boats can reach. That was the purpose for my own boat, and it's still the same purpose of the company, and all boats serve this purpose.
Yeah. And you said it's safe, and so that was the reason for it being steel and aluminium hulls.
Correct, because it's very durable and very rugged material for this application. And we all know that all commercial boats, military boats, work boats, they all build of steel or aluminium. So it's a metal boat rather than fiberglass. And for long-range vessels, like exploration expedition vessels, the weight is your ally. The weight is your comfort, because our small boats have same density as a super yacht, as a large boats built to the code. So the weight is something we're not against of, because it's comfort and structural strengths in our case, because we use this extra thick hull sheets. It serves the purpose of strengths and the correct distribution of the weight throughout the whole superstructure. So yes, it's safer because it's fire resistant material. Yes, it's safer because it's waterproof material. It's make total sense to do exploration vessels built of steel and aluminum.
Brilliant. Okay. So the boat that you're using for this expedition is Papillon, which is a semi-custom Bering 92 yacht. So tell me a little bit about the boat.
Yes, we're using Papillon. It's a Bering 92. It's not semi-custom like our line boat. It's fully custom. So this boat was designed for a customer, and it's a little bit styling wise stays apart. It's look like more yachty boat. It's a lot of people can mix it up with a fiberglass boat, but under the skin, it's a rugged explorer, and This is a 5-stateroom plus 4 crew exploration vessel, basically, but with appearance of a yacht. It's not beamy. It's narrower than our standard boats. 6.8 meters of beam and 29 meters of LOA. Displacement is about 200 tons. It's a very heavy vessel, and we're enjoying this weight because we're out here for 5 days now in the open ocean, and on the way here we had good 12-15 foot sea, and standing here we have a constant 5 to 9 foot, and everybody's comfortable.
Yeah, so the weather isn't great.
No, we had a 25 knots blown pretty much all the time, except for today it subsided to 15. It's first day without white caps.
Okay. You can never predict the weather, can you?
No, but it's what is good about our vessels, because sometimes you cannot predict the weather if you're in remote locations where the forecast is not that reliable and weather has happened to be. And sometimes you have a mission, like we have mission in this trip. We have to be at certain dates. It's a very big collaboration of people who flew from all different directions. We have to make it in certain date. We had no way to postpone it or skip it or reschedule it. So, and we are here in safety and comfort.
And it's a reliable, always turns up on time. If the yacht was a person, they would always be on time.
Correct. On time and safe and predictable.
Very good. Very good.
This experience to be on the Silver Bank is many angles for me. First of all, it's a unique place to be. It's very limited for visitation. It's very protected. It's where whales give birth. Kind of like, to me, it's like a sacred place, and it's 5,000 to 7,000 of whales in this area at the same time. So it's not like you're going on average whale watching and maybe you hit or miss. Maybe you will see the whale, maybe somewhere in the horizon. Here they are like all over you, all around you, and it's nonstop. So to be here is a privilege, and it's a great experience. And for me, it's a first experience I'm trying to see, because we are now participating. This voyage is start of our participation with the program Yachts for Science, and I'm trying to feel what the owner of the boat, or maybe a passenger, a guest of the boat, would feel if he or she participates in an expedition like this, when your voyage have a mission, purpose, and you're learning something. Because for me, it was very dense learning experience. I've met people who are top of their league in many aspects, and with a great world experience. I was a listener in this crowd, because I was learning so much. And for me, as a, let's say, a boat owner or a guest who participating in this expedition, it was best time you can spend on a boat. Very meaningful time, very interesting time. So. And this is combined together. You're visiting unique places, learning something new, meeting people who you will keep in touch with, and who sharing maybe same, maybe different values. But, and you know what is unique? We have 13 people on board, including crew, two people from Bering, me and my colleague Kate, and 7 of the team who is doing work. Part of this research work related to quality of water and presence of, you know, bacteria and harmful something. So it's a research program performed by government of Dominican Republic. And then it's a filming and it's studying of whales. It's also collaboration of several organizations. And 13 people on board, and we have 10 nationalities.
Wow.
It's also a unique experience. And, you know, of course, everybody speaking fluent English, it's joining us. But it's such a cultural, you know, experience also. And it's really good ambience on board. Really good. You start to feel like in our difficult world, it's still on a human level. Everybody friends and very closely related in certain level.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
You know, the boat now used as a platform. It's diving. It's snorkeling. We're chasing whales. So it's tons of filming equipment. I never saw anything like this because it's all level of National Geographic level of photography and filming. So yes, and we have pretty much full house and boat handling it very well. We have no problems with accommodation, so everybody having multiple hot showers because we're all getting soaked wet a couple times a day and salty. So, and our chef producing best food in the world 3 times a day, 3 meals with desserts, with lots of fresh fruits and vegetables, and everybody feel like they're in the super yacht. So it's a great combination of super yacht accommodation. It's fairly small package because we standing here, like I said, that it was rough sea. It's only 3 boats out here. They all in vicinity of 150 feet commercial passenger vessels who deliver the groups of people here. It's only 3 licensed boats which operate here, and it's in vicinity of 500 people per year visiting this bank. And it's besides this 3 certified operators, it's only few permits given to private boats or some research maybe boats, only few. So we are one of the lucky.
One of the lucky ones.
Yeah, and this is like what participation in these programs can give you. It's allowed to be in some places where you're not allowed to go without government permission, in some protected territories. So you can visit unique places like this. And we now start talking about continuing cooperation in this area because they want to expand the research beyond the reef area, so sort of like go further to the ocean. And so why not? It's I think we can collaborate and combine it with our expedition style of chartering the boat. So when the customers can participate in real life expedition and see something they wouldn't see any other way.
So it sounds like a good partnership. So what day are you of the expedition? How long are you into it right now? Because for listeners, I just want to explain that Alexei is in the middle of the ocean right now. So what day are you? How many days have you got left?
We will pick the anchor in a few hours. So we're going to go back overnight. We're about 80 miles offshore, and so we will take off before the dusk because it's a lot of coral reefs here. It's a very shallow area in the middle of the ocean. It's 20 meters, 60 feet depth. We safely anchored, but there are many reefs around which we need to navigate in the daylight because they are chartered. And and we started, this is our 4th day here, so I'm a little bit lost in time because I was before that I was at Dubai boat show and flew straight and trying to catch up with time and everything. I think we took off on the second 2nd of March.
So you're with a bunch of scientists are conducting ocean experiments and also content creators recording the wildlife. So how did you hear about the expedition?
We started a while ago. We actually, before we reach our match and before we found Yachts for Science, we start to think about changing a style of chartering boats, because I think it's better if you give some mission and if you give a schedule and purpose of what we do here, what we do there. It's like program, and it's easier for people to make decision when they can charter a room on a boat. Because it's, if you charter a whole boat, it's usually big expense and you have to collect big family. A decision-making process is very tough. So, and, basically it was thinking about purpose of, because in our opinion, people struggle when they get boat delivered, because then they're on their own and they have to do something with this. And, the boat is complex, boat is good, safe, everything. You have to have a very good crew. And, you know, like some people think that they can do it themselves or get substandard crew, and it doesn't work like this. We want to provide very easy ownership by managing and maintaining our boats and bringing the purpose to this boat, so that boat's in operation most time of the year and owner can enjoy it anytime and everybody else can enjoy it the same way. So, and when we start to look for purpose of what we can offer, something not what the generic tourist attractions offer the area, we start to think about collaboration with underwater archaeology programs. We start to hear that there's, you know, some crafts needed for this, and gather some information piece by piece. And then we found Yachts for Science and start our conversations. And it's very quickly materialized in this collaboration, which we're experiencing right now. And we, with the team of guys here, we're exploring opportunities to do it here, there. It's like a brainstorming, because it's a lot of opportunities. And I think it's a very, very good purpose. It's all about life preservation. It's all about study of our planet, protecting our planet. So it's very, in my opinion, positive approach.
Yes. And any advice you would give to yacht owners thinking of going, doing the same thing, whether they're bearing customers or not? What would advice?
My advice would be, to buy a very safe and capable vessel. That's what we build and several other builders in this size. It's not many of them, because it's tough to build rugged and safe vessel which comply with the class requirements and certified to the class. Even smallest of our line is a commercial charter class certifiable. It's an option, but we provide this. So, and this vessel can bring you to the places which are further away from beaten path. And usually these places where you can see something new, something which not being seen before, not been filmed before or described before. And if you have a mission to go somewhere, it's even more exciting, because then you have a purpose and then you can learn something. Mama mia, I'm looking right now at dancing whale just a few hundred yards from here. It's incredible.
Oh, wow. So, yeah, Have you personally been involved in any of the science or any of the work that's been happening on the boat?
No, we are rather observants here, and we, of course, we were involved in preparation because logistics were crucial. The boat is in between charters; everything had to be played like perfectly. And after we get on board, we didn't have much of a program. So for me, it was main task is to feel how it's gonna be in the future of combining the mission of boat ownership or vacationing on the boat with the mission of expedition. So that's okay. That's very fruitful time for me because I did grasp this understanding. I know which direction to go, and it's a good experience, very useful experience. And of course, the conversation, because everybody is very open and they sharing, you know, footage. They shoot just a few hours ago. We all kind of watching how beautiful this, photos or filming is. And, they explain a lot about, we have marine biologists who explain about the whale behaviors and what's going on exactly and whose voices we're hearing. And, you know, it's just learning incredible, very condensed information coming from top scientists, top filmmakers. You know, it's just priceless. This is priceless. You cannot buy it for money you pay for charter. This is your education. Yeah, yeah. This is your new experience. This is something you gaining when you have a purpose for your boat ownership or time on your boat.
So what have you learned? Tell me some fascinating facts about whales.
You know, I learned that it's such a gentle creatures. They can feel you. That you can be like a few centimeters from them, like just a, and they can absolutely feel where you at, and they will not do harmful movement because they're 100 times bigger than you. And anything, you know, the sudden move, even the babies, they're so careful around the humans. Not to touch them, not to harm, because I think they have a understanding of how different our sizes and how harmful this contact could be. So, and the second that, you know, like they're here with, because there is no food for them here. They're not feeding here for several months. They just deliver the babies, raise them, teach them on the shallow waters, teach them how to be in this environment, and then they take a trip up north, 2,000 miles, where they're feeding grounds, so they can fast for a few months with no harm, and probably rejuvenate because they live a long life.
And what have you been your highlights of this trip?
Highlights. You know, I was again impressed by this boat. Maybe now through the impressions of our team here. So again, I heard the compliments because the crew, when the boat was delivered here, the crew went through terrible seas. It was like over 15 feet all of the way. And they were on strict schedule, and they were like, wow, it's a first. And then when we went out and when we spent a couple of days on the open ocean with 25 knot wind sustain, everybody several times told me we never experienced anything like this. Boat is super stable. Nobody hold anything, you know, like we having three meals a day. It's like very, 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 very safe. You feel safe all the time. Like nobody felt any anxiety or anything, and nobody using any motion pills. So everybody happy about this because people are not free of the seasickness. It's just the boat don't give it to you. So, and everybody is free of Dramamine. Everybody is alert and fully functional. That's also very, very good thing. This is a highlight, and this is reassurance that, you know, like we're doing something right. And this quality of being on a boat is delivered on smaller boats, and of course on bigger boats it's much easier to do, but we do it in the size of 70 foot. So that's all related to density of the boat, how dense of the boat, how much of the boat per volume. The lighter boat, the less comfortable boat is in a displacement world.
Thanks so much to Max and Alexei for sharing your stories. I just wanted to finish by giving a final plug to Yachts for Science, who connect yacht owners with the scientific community to do great things. If you're interested in getting involved in any way, please do visit yachtsforscience.com. Thank you for listening to this week's Big Boat interview. This interview was mixed by Naomi Wilson.